What is up, Pitcherless family? I'm your host, Brett Ford, here with senior analyst Scott Chu, back for another episode of Hacks and Jacks. It's been a minute. I had vacation, had some unforeseen circumstances come up. But Scott, it's good to see you. How are things?
Not bad. Busy. I really wanted to get something out the last 2 weeks. And just by the time I finished the article, which has come out late, I was like, well, I don't even know what I'd talk about yet. Cause like by Thursday night, I'm like, I don't know what this article is going to say. I kind of know where guys will be ranked, which is what we're going to today. At the time of recording, the article is not out yet. It should be out sometime early on Friday, when you're listening to this, but, I've got the ranks done, but I haven't written up all that stuff. So, you know, life is good, but it's busy these days, not just cause between the two of us, we have a million kids, but, just it's summer and it seems like that's just when things get a little wild.
Yeah, man. I feel you, you know, over on the QBless side of things, fantasy football is starting to get into full swing and, I'm feeling the stress of, double dipping a little bit. So,
it didn't help that I was at the Tigers game yesterday. So what is possibly Tarek Skubal's last start in Detroit? I had to be there. Huge Skubal fan.
And you didn't stay the whole time, did you?
I did. Oof. I sure did. It was really hard not just to watch Skubal's last game in Detroit, but what was quite possibly the last game that mattered for Detroit. Like, that's a tough game to lose up 7-0 to a team that's in the wild card race with you. It almost is like, I almost care less about the wild card and be like, will the White Sox or Twins fall apart and give Detroit a chance to win the division just because the division's no good? Who knows? But yeah, it was.
We've seen it happen in the AL Central recently.
Both for and against the Tigers.
Yeah. Yeah. So who knows? I mean, can anybody really say they're out of it quite yet? I don't know. But it would take a monumental turnaround similar to what we saw from them previously.
2 years ago, yeah.
Let's jump into news and notes. We've got, it feels like a million guys went on the IL this week and a lot of big names. We look at Juan Soto headed to the IL, Josh Young, Cody Bellinger, Shea Langeliers probably out for the year, Spencer Steer, Kerry Carpenter, Curtis Meade gets traded to the Red Sox and then is immediately placed on the IL, Casey Schmidt, Vinny Pasquantino, Byron Buxton, and don't look now, but Shohei Ohtani is going with pain management right now in a sore knee.
Yeah. Hooray. The ones that hurt the most, honestly, were Meade and Schmidt. They were two of my favorite targets for the second half, and they're not going to play much of the second half, which hurts. But, you know, the biggest name, you know, Juan Soto, he'll be fine. There was some initial rhetoric that they're like, oh, what if they just shut him down because the season stinks? And it's like, yeah, I mean, you are still paying the guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, right? He's going to need a little too much for that.
So I do think that he's going to play. It may not be until September. And that's true for a lot of these guys that got hurt, right? So Langeliers, he's done for the year. No doubt about it. Meade, maybe he comes back during the last week if they're still in the playoff race. But that's it. So like, you don't really care about that for fantasy. Schmidt, meh. Josh Young, they thought he might come back right away, but he had a setback in his injury. So that might be another week or two. We'll see how that goes. You know, you've got Buxton, which, you know, he's just always a health risk, right? He's real good when he plays. He's hurt a lot. This is just par for that course. Bellinger, I think Bellinger will be back by September or so. It's enough time to help you. But I think the biggest thing that we're running into more and more head-to-head fantasy baseball leagues are ending their season in mid-September, right? So if that's the case, because you're doing your transition to football, you have to have a lot quicker trigger. Right. Like if they're going to come back for 20 games, like, but you're only going to get 10 of those, 5 of those. You don't care. I mean, so Juan, like if we think they're going to be back for all of September, like that still matters for your playoffs. A player of Juan Soto's caliber, Aaron Judge's caliber, you just hold, right? Because if you get them for 2 weeks, that's still like the probably one of the best players for those 2 weeks. But, you know, a guy like Cody Bellinger, if he has a setback, he's kind of been looking a little rough lately. Like he's a fringe top 50 sort of player. Having him for 2 weeks, I'm not sure I care so much. A month, sure. But 2 weeks, I kind of don't care as much. So that's the kind of calculus you need to start doing in your head. Again, it's a lot of guys on the IL right now. A lot of guys that could be returning sometime in December or in September. And we just don't know. I mean, you can look at Trevor Story, Connor Griffin, Bobby Witt Jr. should be back a little earlier than that. But Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton still doesn't have a timeline. O'Neill Cruz is cleared for all activities, but he's probably looking at something closer to like late August, mid to late August, probably even early September. It's a lot of dudes that you're waiting on to come up just during that time. We still don't know when Michael Garcia is going to come back because he's got pain in his hand. It's a lot of high caliber players that are hurt, and you just got to keep streaming and waiting. But right now, if you think you're going to get a whole month and this is a top 75 caliber player, you hold, right? That's going to be my general advice. If you're talking like top 100 caliber hitter, I should say hitter, not play, top like 100 caliber hitter, I'm hoping I'm chasing upside, but in like a 10 or 12 where I only need three outfielders and it's an outfielder, I'm like, meh. Whereas if it's like a third baseman, I'm like, well, what choice do I have? Like what? That's the other question you really need to ask yourself. It's like, what are my, I don't think I'm going to get a lot from him, but like 3 weeks of him might be better than the replacement level at certain positions. This really comes up for third base, right? Like third base just doesn't have a lot out there. Like, do you really want Nolan Arenado instead of waiting for your guy? Right. Obviously like, you know, Josh Young, that one's maybe a little bit closer, but you know, it's tough. Outfield is the hardest one in some sense when it's a player like Judge or Soto, or maybe even Bellinger. But if it's like a lesser guy who's like maybe towards like the top 100 or so, and it's an outfielder and it's a three outfield league, move on. There's too many fish in that sea.
Well, the good news is we got a couple of top 10 bats back in action this week. Ronald Acuna returns for the Atlanta Braves, and Nick Kurtz is back for the Athletics, although he just took a hit-by-pitch in the hand, if I saw that correctly, is getting x-rays or an MRI, some kind of testing done today. I don't know if we have an update for that yet, but he could be headed back to the IL, which would stink. And then Matt McClain comes back as well. So there is hope. There is some light at the end of the tunnel for fantasy managers that these guys might come back soon, maybe put up some numbers.
Yeah, and I mean, Nick Kurtz is active today. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. But yeah, it is tough. I think the one player that I'm watching that's come back more than anything is Ronald Acuna Jr. And that's less from a, what's he going to be like this season? Like, you're not going to cut him. Like, let's be realistic. And he did hit, you know, he hit a home run today, which looked good, but we're talking about a lot of, I mean, it's not been a good season for him. It makes it his third season of the last, you know, five that he's been active, that the numbers just haven't really been what we hoped. You know, currently on the season, if you include this home run, he's still only slugging .416, right? That's his eighth home run of the season. He does have 15 stolen bases. This is all over 56 games. But at some point, especially as we head into next year, the question really becomes like, how much am I willing to pay? Every year we get 1 year further away from 2023, which was the, you know, obviously the massive 41 home run, 73 stolen bases. This will be the third straight season that he's under definitely 110 games, maybe even under 100, depending on how many off days he gets between now and the end of the season. So the third one with that, the third straight season where he's almost certainly not going to clear, you know, he got 21 home runs last year. I don't see how he gets much higher than that this year. Maybe he steals, you know, he could steal 25 bases depending on how aggressive they let him be. But like, it's a real question now. Like, what is the value of a player like this? right? What is the value of a player who's just not active all that much? Like at the start of next season, he'll be 29 years old. That's not old, but it's a lot of injury. It's so much injury. So I'm watching him. I want to see if the contact gets a little better. The quality of contact is fine. It's down, obviously, from where it was in years past. But I'm really even just thinking about, like, how often does he make contact, right? Like, can he – is he – how many categories can he be a plus in? He's hitting 243, right? Like, can he go back to being a high-ratio guy and have all these stats? So that's the thing I'm really watching from him. But, you know, otherwise, yeah, he's back, but he's not in my top 20 yet. And that's because of these concerns I have about – how often he's going to make contact, combined with the fact that I don't know how many more games he's going to miss.
Completely fair criticism of Acuna. I'm optimistic. I just acquired him in one of my 12 team rotos. See how it goes. One more piece of news in a corresponding move to the Curtis Meade trade. The Washington Nationals have called up Brady House, called back up Brady House. He was sent down earlier this season after what was kind of a relatively successful stint in the majors. I know we were both kind of surprised when he did get sent down. What are you hoping to see out of House? And, you know, is third base eligible? You said the position is shallow. Is he relevant at third base?
If he was going to play, but they seem very content to play Jorbit Vivas at times at third base. You know, Brady House has only started two of the five games that he's been active. So I don't really think you can look at him as much. There are guys obviously to look at in this offense. I think right now you want any piece of this offense you can get in terms of the top half of it. It's sort of including Jalen Lyle, but you know, Jacob Young's hitting pretty well, even though he is, you know, not playing every day necessarily, despite how well he's hitting. You've got, you know, CJ Abrams, who's just, you know, as much as I've been concerned about the way he's performing, he does continue to perform. Dylan Cruz is hitting well. He's moved up to third in the order. So he's a guy that if he's still hanging around out there for some reason, go ahead and scoop him. I'm not sure how much I trust it long term, but, you know, he's been good. But yeah, I can't really get behind Brady House or really anybody besides, I mean, Nassim Nunez makes sense from a speed perspective. But, you know, Kyber Ruiz drops in these rankings because of playing time concerns I have for him. Dalen Lyle's been very up and down. But, yeah, Wood, Garcia Jr., Cruz, Abrams, those are guys you want. Yeah, I mean, you just lock in because of how good this offense has been. But the rest of them, man, there's really not much left.
And last piece of news, this actually came through this morning, or maybe yesterday morning. Your Detroit Tigers have called up outfielder Max Clark, their top prospect within the organization. Is this something that we should get excited about? Is this something you're excited about as a Tigers fan?
I mean, I'm excited, right? This is a top five overall prospect in baseball. Again, that's more of like an overall prospect thing, not necessarily as a fantasy prospect. He is a very, very well-rounded prospect. He can provide ratios. He's got power. He's got speed. We're not talking like 30, 40 home run power. We're talking like 20-plus home run power, 20-plus stolen base kind of speed. He's been really, really good his last 15 games, though, down in AAA. 5 home runs, 2 steals, OPS over 1,000. And I think he's going to play enough because they've been starting McKinstry, Baez, Outman, and Vierling. Outman might be the worst statistically. Is like the worst player on a 25-man roster in baseball in terms of like war and things. This is not my evaluation of the man. I'm telling you what the numbers say. The numbers say he might be the worst in all of baseball. And, you know, Vierling has not been good. McKinstry hasn't been nearly as good as the all-star he was last year. Javi Baez is a spark plug, but he is also Javi Baez. So I think Max Clark will find playing time in that outfield, even when Kerry Carpenter returns. There's a role for him there. However, he does not make the rankings quite yet. I think if you're in a 5 outfield league, he's definitely worth a scoop. But because these rankings are geared towards these, you know, 10 to 12 team, 3 outfield leagues, it's like, man, there's probably something better on your wire. But he's worth at least, you know, kind of putting a little star on. Or obviously if you have like an NA, if it's not an NA spot, but if you've got like long term, you know, if you can keep a lot of player, you know, the more you kind of drift towards dynasty, this is a guy who could be very, very relevant for a long time. But this isn't, we're not talking about like, yes, he's a top five prospect, but you wouldn't grade him near like a Connor Griffin, right? He's not going to have the offensive presence of like Jesus Madi, right? He's not that level of fantasy prospect, but he is a very, very good one. He would be closer to the impact of a guy like Kevin McGonigal or JJ Weatherholt, maybe a little bit higher overall, but that's the kind of fantasy level prospect you're looking at here. Not in terms of like a statistical comp as in like this, he does the same things as them, but the overall value, that's sort of the range you're talking about. Very, very good, but not like an elite fantasy contributor.
Excellent. Yeah, that's Max Clark, Detroit Tigers outfield prospect. Like we said, called up on Wednesday. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk the risers and fallers in Scott's top 150 hitters list after this. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm your host, Brett Ford, here with senior analyst Scott Chu. We're talking hitters on pitcher list. And every week we dive into Scott's top 150 hitters list. We talk about the risers. We talk about the fallers. We'll start with the guys who have climbed up the list this week. And let's start in tier one, Scott, just because we haven't really visited it in a couple of weeks. You know, for as long as I can remember, this has been a two-hitter tier with Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge topping these ranks. Now, obviously, Aaron Judge on the IL, so he is no longer in the ranks at the moment. But Tier 1 now has three hitters in it. Yordan Alvarez and James Wood both joined Shohei at the top. Talk to me about those two guys.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've made clear how much I love Yordan Alvarez. I called him Juan Soto with no knees. I'm not the only one who's probably done that, but he's been the number two hitter in fantasy on the year. He's almost never bad in 108 games. He has he tied his career. He's almost at his career high for home runs. It's 108 games, 35 home runs. His OPS on the season is over, like well over a thousand, 1,000. It's like 1,072. So 1072 OPS so far on the season. His WRC plus is 191. I mean, it's ludicrous. And his 444 WOBA, which, I mean, again, that's a silly number, video game number, is below his ex-WOBA. His expected WOBA is 475. Like, it's unbelievable how good he is. And even though the Astros have been disappointing overall as an offense, the dude's got 80 RBI already. Like, what else do you want? I mean, yes, injuries are always going to be a concern for Yordan Alvarez. If not for the injuries, he would be number one because, you know, Shohei doesn't steal anymore, right? So this whole, you know, I expand that tier. And then, of course, you've got James Wood, who, look, we've seen him be a top 10 caliber hitter for a whole half. I think he's shown, though, that said, he's shown a lot of signs that he can be better than that, right? He's shown a lot of improvement against breaking balls. And he does steal bases, right? So he's got 30 home runs so far on the season, 16 stolen bases. He's hitting 271. He doesn't have quite the same level of silly batted ball quality as like Yordan Alvarez. Like, you know, his expected WOBA is only 424. Like, what a scrub, you know, like 50 whole points he's missing. That's still a silly, silly number. And I guess there's a little bit more risk with just because we've seen him collapse so hard. So I take those two risks kind of the same. I think as a pure hitter, Yordan Alvarez is better than James Wood. I don't think there's a ton to argue about there, especially because like Yordan Alvarez also walks more than he strikes out most of the time. Like it's 15.4% walk rate, 17.3% strikeout rate. It keeps his ratios really, really high, right? Like you know, James Wood does have 15 stolen bases on him. Yordan Alvarez has like 50 points of batting average on him. So it's kind of like pick your poison, you know? I think if you really want to argue like which one's better at the top, Ohtani's still there, even though he hasn't been as good as these guys so far this season, because like he is still Shohei Ohtani. We've seen him be absolutely amazing. I wouldn't be shocked if Ohtani continues to slump, that maybe these two become my top one and two tiers for the first time in ages, that my tier one isn't Ohtani or Judge at least containing those two guys. But these guys have really set themselves out as the best hitters in baseball right now. They've been better than Juan Soto, who's usually like the gold standard, but Soto himself obviously just hit the IL. And also, he's not really running as much anymore. That was a huge thing for him last season, but he's only got, he stole 38 bases last year. He's only got 7 so far this year. I don't imagine he's going to have a lot more of those. So obviously, again, he's been excellent too, but he'd been slumping a bit lately in terms of actual production, not in terms of his like expected stats. They've been off the chain, but he's walking so much that he doesn't drive the same fantasy value and the rest of the Mets stink. Yeah. I mean, I think these two guys are well deserving of it. And it's nice to see this top tier expand. And I think you can even start making arguments that some guys in tier two, if they continue to be good for the rest of the season, will even deepen tier one. I said it coming into the season, the top like 10 to 15 batters are as good as they've ever been. And I'd say that's getting, that opinion has gotten stronger as the season goes on, not weaker, even though some of the names within that have changed.
We talk about some of the names within those top tiers changing. One of the guys who has climbed these ranks, and I know he's been here for a large part of the season, but certainly one that coming into the year we might not have expected in the top 20 hitters, is CJ Abrams, Washington infielder. He and Wood are just carrying that offense on their backs. Abrams up 7 spots to tier 3, 13th overall hitter, right behind Kyle Schwarber. That's not a sentence that I thought I would say at the beginning of this year.
No, and I think a lot of people would have beef with that, because Abrams has been a top 5 hitter so far on the season. Lately, I mean, he really has exploded lately. Since the All-Star break, he's just done nothing but hit bombs. Which is like right around the time I said, oh, he's a good candidate to sell. And then he's like, yeah, no, I'm not. And he's hitting .408 and slugging .918 since the break. He's actually weirdly had a bit of an up and down season. When you just look at like the rolling charts, like his June wasn't nearly as strong in terms of batted ball quality as, he's sort of been lately, obviously like since the break. And that, he hit .227 in June. He still hit 6 home runs. And it's the home runs, I have to say, are a big surprise. He's never really been thought of as like a power prospect, right? Like he had some pop, but nobody ever thought he'd be a guy on pace for 40 plus home runs, right? And I'm still a little skeptical he gets quite that high. But yeah, he's really taken a big step forward. And the fact that he's gotten, so he had this huge peak early in the season back in April. He sort of got back up that high in like late May, early June. And then he was he had been on this like downward decline. And then the break comes and he's as good as he was early in the season. And seeing him get back to that spot, this is the same thing I talked about earlier this year with like Jordan Walker. Something changes when you see a guy get back to that spot. In fact, you just read this rank, where he's right behind Kyle Schwarber. He may be a little higher by the time the article publishes, right? He may move up a couple spots from there even, because again, I'm very impressed by players who get back to that peak, right? And we'll talk a lot about guys who are not doing that, and that makes me very concerned. But to see him get back to the same peak he had in April, just over the last 2 weeks or so, that changes a lot of things.
We'll move on to our next riser. We're going down to tier 6 here, jumping 12 spots this week at the catcher position. Arizona Diamondbacks, Gabriel Moreno. Talk to me about what Moreno's doing out in the desert.
Hitting the baseball is what he's doing. I mean, obviously that's true of everybody that's kind of rising. It's usually because they are hitting the baseball in one form or another, but he's doing a couple things that I appreciate. I don't want to say that the power is unprecedented, but he is, again, he's always been a guy who can hit for average, right? He's got over 1,400 career plate appearances. His career batting average is .287. That's the thing he's always been known for. I think the big difference now is, number one, a level of consistency he's never had before. I mean, this dude is a positive like every single week, right? Especially if you're in points leagues, like he's really probably carrying you in points leagues, but he's really improved across the board in terms of like his, you know, his overall production. He does swing the bat a little harder. Although, to be honest, this is not a guy who like barrels the ball everywhere or anything like that. He puts a ton of balls in play. He hits the ball really to all fields. He, you know, he's not one of these like super pull. He's pulling more this year than he has in years past, but he still kind of distributes the ball fairly well across the entire field. And very importantly, he gets DH at bats now. So Gabriel Moreno has always been a guy who's been very limited by playing time, but that has taken a big step forward now that he's got these DH at bats. Because honestly, who else are the Diamondbacks going to play at DH? Right, they don't have guys that are just begging for these DH spots. So, you know, Moreno's been doing that, and he's been one of the best hitters in the game over the last couple of weeks. So I'd raise him higher if not for a fairly lengthy injury history, right? So Moreno's never played more than 110 games in a season for each of the last 3 years. He's played considerably less than 100 games. I think he will get there this year, obviously, because he's already at 80-something. I probably just jinxed it, but whatever. But yeah, so, you know, I wish the counting stats were a little better. I wish the Diamondbacks offense was a little better, but you can't fault Moreno, who's hitting the ball. Again, just extremely well. He's got this really, really high ex-woba, which is kind of weird for a guy who doesn't hit for a ton of power, but that's because he hits so many balls that are, you know, not quite home runs, but they're not just like weak flies either. They are good, solid hits. A lot of, you know, some line drives. He's not like a crazy high line drive hitter, but he does hit a fair amount of line drives. His ground, like basically every at bat's a quality at bat out of Gabriel Moreno. So obviously he's not on your wire anymore, but if you've scooped him up, this is still, I mean, he's only 26 years old. This is a guy who could very well be a long-term fantasy, you know, asset at catcher. Even though he doesn't jump off the page in the home run totals, this could be a guy that hits like 15-ish home runs in a season, you know, somewhere between like 12 and 15 home runs, and who can hit 300 and who can get to like 70 or 80 RBI. It doesn't sound like much, but for a catcher, that's a lot, right? When you get past the Ben Rices and the Drake Baldwins of the world, you land on the Gabriel Morenos who, you know, again, there is this new class of catcher at the top, like the top five catchers that includes like Hunter Goodman. These guys put up crazy numbers, but below that, this second tier or third tier of catchers, however you want to call it, you know, Moreno's probably the best one out of that group. And like, what else could you possibly want? Maybe steals, but don't get greedy. These are catchers. Come on.
We'll move from catcher to second base. We jump down a tier, and we're going to talk about Atlanta Braves second baseman Ozzie Albies. He's up 11 spots. Just had a two-run single in the Braves win against the Nationals this evening to put them ahead late in the game. Ozzie Albies is a guy who has been up and down this list several times over the past 2 years. Right now he's settled in at 53 overall. How do you feel about his fluctuation through your ranks?
Ozzie Albies drives me nuts because when you try to evaluate his play, using any metric that I would normally use to evaluate a player beyond like runs scored, RBI, stuff like that, he looks awful, right? He has a 243 xWOBA in June. And I know I'm using this xWOBA a lot. Again, this is expected WOBA. This is based on largely launch angle, exit velocity. But look, here's the thing. It's a great way to test for luck. The problem is it always looks like Ozzie Albies is really, really lucky. And there's sometimes ways to explain this. So Isak Paredes, it's really easy to explain because he just pulls fly balls. And when you start adding in direction, you can start to understand it. Ozzie Albies is, so Nick had a term, the great undulator. He used it with Jose Berrios, right? Who is good, but just like up and down all the time. That is Ozzie Albies. So when I say he's got like a not very good ex-WOBA for June, it's like 243. I don't mean like it's average. Okay. 243 makes it the fifth worst ex-WOBA in all of baseball for qualified hitters in the month of July, right? All of them. It's just a little bit worse than Kyle Manzardo. Okay. That's really, really hard to wrap your head around. He does have six home runs. He's hit quite a few of them lately. And I wish I could tell you that means that like his expected WOBA is like improving a lot of late. It's not. He doesn't hit the ball all that hard, right? So even if you just go like since the break where he's been fairly successful, his ex-WOBA still 246, right? But he's putting up counting stats. He's putting the ball in play. He doesn't hit it hard. I don't know what to make of this guy. Cause like, look, in reality, he has been a top 40 hitter this season, right? He just has been. But I don't understand. It defies all of the things you do to analyze it. So that long rant is for me to say, dude, I'm just ranking him there now. That's what he's been. But I don't understand it. I don't have a way where I can tell you, like, his hard hit rate's 28.2%. That's just, it's like objectively bad, right? It's bad. It's bad for a second baseman. It's good for me, but it's bad for a major league ball player. And like, again, he does pull a lot of balls, right? Which helps explain some of it, but not to the, like, it doesn't explain it to this extent. It just doesn't. So I'm at a total loss.
We'll move on to a guy who hopefully is a little bit more easy to understand. It's Renaissance man Salvador Perez, the Kansas City Royals catcher and first baseman, up 21 spots, almost cracks the top 100, becomes the Kansas City Royals all-time franchise leader in home runs, almost pushes him into the top 100, Scott. Talk to me about Sal Perez.
I mean, what don't you know about Sal Perez at this point in his career? He swings the bat all the time. He's not quite as good as it as he used to be. We've all been afraid of like being the one left holding the bag when everything falls apart. It has looked at times like this might be the year that that happens. Although he's been a lot better in the second half and really for like exactly the second half. Right. So he's already hit four home runs since the break. And it'd be easy to say like, oh, well, the rest, he's feeling really rejuvenated. Dude, I don't know what it is, but the batted ball quality is as good as the results, right? This is not luck driven. This isn't, the Ozzy Albies crap where I'm like, I don't understand what's happening. I understand what's happening. He's hitting the ball hard. He's hitting it up in the air. Right. And the Royals need him to. I mean, I don't think they're playing for a whole lot, even though the AL Central's technically wide open. The Royals are last in the division. They've only got 46 wins, but hey, I mean, a couple things going on in that, you know, he's going to keep playing every day. He's got a DH now because everybody else is gone. They're not in the lineup right now. Somebody has to lead this team. It might as well be him. And, one other nice little thing, they're headed to Colorado this weekend, right? So Sal Perez is hot. He's heading to Colorado. This is almost like a preemptive little jump here. Cause I think he's going to face, Tomoyuki Sugano, Ryan Feltner and Kyle Freeland up there. And I think he's going to have a real good time.
One more guy. I didn't put this guy on the show sheet and I apologize, but there's one more guy I want to talk about just because I keep seeing his name pop up in like most added lists and he's just been really hot in the middle of the Padres lineup. And that's first baseman Ty France. He's up 22 spots this week to 110 overall. And he's another name that I never thought preseason I would see on this list. I don't think he was even on a roster to begin the year. He's a guy, the last time we saw him, I think in a full-time role was Seattle a couple years ago where he batted like 180 before getting DFA'd or sent to the minors or whatever they did with him. But really not a guy who's been fantasy relevant for several years. And now all of a sudden here he pops up in the middle of the Padres lineup and is mashing the baseball.
Yeah. And let's be clear. He wasn't really that good earlier this season either. Right. He was fine, but he's really taken off in the month of July. Right. That's really where Everything has kind of come together. He's put up like decent numbers, but like they were really hard to believe earlier in the season. The plate discipline was not very good. Some of it looked like it was kind of luck driven, but yeah, month of July, he's been one of the best hitters in baseball. And look, he doesn't quite get into the top 100. I'm sure people are like, oh, but you know, the batted ball quality is good. And it is, right? This is not a luck driven sort of spike. But what I will tell you is that we do see him make these little spikes all the time, and they don't last terribly long, right? We've seen him do it in multiple seasons where he has like a month or two where he's relevant and then he kind of fades away. So Ty France is the really good streamer, right? Ty France is the kind of guy that you're going to add because he's hot and you're just going to let that ride there, letting him hit fourth. Like he's been moved up to fourth in this lineup every single day, righties, lefties, it doesn't matter. This lineup isn't amazing, but it's gotten better than it was earlier in the season with one Manny Machado remembering how to be Manny Machado. That's been a big deal. Fernando Tatis Jr. isn't quite the same as he was, but he's gotten better. And Jackson Merrill has figured out how to hit again. And they're getting some random contributions. You know, you thought Ty France was a random contribution. How about Luis Rengifo? He is hitting for them lately. He doesn't quite make the ranks, but he is hitting. So there's some value here, and, you know, get it while it's hot, right? Get it while steam's still coming off the pie, right? Eventually this is going to cool down. It's not going to be quite as exciting. He may continue to be like an okay first baseman. But again, this isn't a guy. I wouldn't be shocked if we're talking in mid August to late August about like, hey, do you still need to keep him? Right. It's not as though there's like a bunch of competition for his playing time or anything. Like, they don't really have a lot of first basemen in San Diego. But I do wonder if he'll be able to continue producing. He'll still play, which will make him like startable maybe, but there's not a ton of excitement here in terms of this is a 32-year-old. Can an old dog learn new tricks? Sure. But we've got a pretty long track record on Ty France as a guy who can be a full-time starter and who can flash times where he's valuable. But overall, you'll find that, like, you know, are we just going to ignore that he has basically, he's been a full-time starter pretty much every year of his career. He's played at least 138 games since the start of 2021. And look, the last three seasons, he didn't slug above 370. Right. So I'm not saying that that means he's just going to stink. Right. But I do think that the numbers you're seeing right now are the best he can be. And they're more likely to go down from here than up for the remainder of season in terms of like his overall line. But that doesn't mean he's not still well worth streaming. Isn't well worth being a top 150 hitter, a guy that should be rostered everywhere right now. The question is how long.
Fair points. And we'll see how long France can hold on to the magic out there in San Diego. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the fallers on Scott's list after this. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm your host, Brett Ford, here with Scott Chu. We're talking hitters on pitcher list, diving into Scott's top 150 hitters list for this week, talking about the guys falling down the list. And the first place we're going to start with this discussion, Scott, is tier six, the very bottom, 52nd overall, down 10 spots this week. We mentioned his name earlier in the, or actually it might've been pre-show that we were talking about him. It's Los Angeles Dodgers outfielder, Andy Pages. Incredible start to the season in April and May, and not so much since.
Yeah. And again, this isn't to say that he's been like outright bad. As of right now, he sits as a top 20 hitter in standard leagues on the season. And a big part of that is not how well he's swinging the bat for the last 2 months, but instead the fact that he hit second for the Dodgers. And that itself is driving a ton of value for Pages. The problem is, again, is that he's not actually hitting all that well. He's getting a lot of results every time he, you know, kind of hits the ball. But if you just go from the start of June, he's hitting 236, 324, 372, right? You don't need to be a stats whiz to kind of get the feeling that maybe those numbers aren't very good. He's only got 5 home runs in that whole span, but he does have a lot of counting stats. And the main reason for that, again, is because he's a Dodger, right? So even though he's been incredibly mediocre for the last 48 games, he still managed to put up a total of, you know, 48 combined runs in RBI in 48 games. That's not amazing. But that's like a dude who would have 160 ish combined at the end of the year. So like 80 runs, 80, you know, for him, it'd look more like 90 runs and like 70 RBI, right? Like those are pretty good numbers for a guy that's not hitting well at all, right? That's what being a Dodger does. Hitting number two for the Dodgers mean you will get really good counting stats without having to work that, without having to hit the ball that well to get there. And he's one guy, you know, there's another one that, you know, we'll mention later that it's really hard to know what to do with these guys. Now, luckily for Pies, because he hits second for the Dodgers, as long as he hits somewhere in the top half of the order for the Dodgers, you don't really have to think. You just go, okay, leave him in. Because if he puts wood on the ball, he will probably get me some kind of run or RBI or something, right? Especially hitting second. But, you know, it's going to be tougher with the other guy that we're talking about. But if he continues to do this, I mean, we could see Pies fall even further. But again, as a guy who's hitting second for the Dodgers, it's really hard to fall out of the top 75. It's just hard to do because you're going to pile up so many counting stats just being in that position. That's why guys move up and down this list just for like getting new spots in the batting order. Pies being cemented at that number two spot for the Dodgers, that just keeps his floor so high. Because as you can see, even when you're not hitting, you're fantasy viable.
Well, let's move down the list a little bit to a guy that we've talked about a couple of times this year. And unfortunately, every time we do, it's because he's fallen further down the list. And that's Baltimore Orioles shortstop Gunnar Henderson, down eight more spots to 56, right in the middle of tier seven. I mean, we're still holding Gunnar, right? Like, you can't drop him. Can you?
So the reason the answer is no, at least in standard leagues, is because as bad as he's been, thanks to the fact that he still hits, you know, somewhere between one and three for the Orioles, who aren't an amazing offense, but they have some power at the top. even though all the expected stats are way down, even though, you know, the batting average, he does have more home runs than he had last year. If that means anything to you, it probably doesn't, because that's still only 18. But, and he's hitting 219. He's still been a top 100 hitter overall. Again, that is really because of where he hits in this lineup. And if the Orioles haven't moved him down now, they're just not gonna, right? And I'm not sure they have a lot of other options anyway, but he's continues to be a guy you got to hold, but it is, I think there's people in 18 leagues or shallow 10 team leagues that have a tough decision to make based on who's available. Right. So I rank him in the 50s. Cause like, unless the player's sort of above this on the list, or at least within a tier or two of him, I'm really not going to entertain it, because Gunnar Henderson could totally heat up for a half and be one of the best players in baseball. There's a reason that even after a bad season, he was kind of consensus top 20 hitter coming into the year, right? There's a ton of talent here. He's just really, really frustrating to watch right now. And I wish I could point to like a single thing that's not going well. In fact, there's some things that look like they're going right. You know, he is pulling the ball more. He, you know, isn't hitting too many ground balls. He's getting more balls in the air in general, but the quality of contact just isn't there. And the average exit velocity has taken quite a bit of a dip. He could get it all back. We have a long track record of Gunnar Henderson being real, real good, right? We have two seasons where he was real, real good. And then we have last year, which was weird, right? So yes, you hold. 18 leagues, maybe not. But I mean, again, in 18 leagues, you're loyal to nobody, right? You're loyal to Yordan Alvarez and like Ben Rice and, you know, the top 25 guys. And then after that, you really start getting into weird, tough decisions if a guy has a bad month. With Henderson, I do think you hold in most leagues, but that conversation could change by mid-August especially when you're looking at the playoffs and you're looking at name and really, again, dependent on other names that are available, but especially as teams start to fall out of it due to football and due to not being in contention anymore. So the waiver wire quality is a lot higher. We could start having some really tough conversations by then.
Let's take another a look down the list at another guy who might have to have some conversations about tier 10, 81st overall, down 20 spots this week. Philadelphia Phillies outfielder Brandon Marsh, falling out of the top 80 right now. And I think we talked about it pre-show. He's still a top 50 hitter on the season, Scott. Why are we so down on Marsh coming out of the All-Star break?
Yeah, per the FanGraphs player rater, he's actually at 51. I think I misspoke earlier, but we talked about Pages, how a lot of his talent, you know, a lot of his success is really, really front loaded. And that's exactly what happened with Brandon Marsh. Brandon Marsh hit 9 home runs in the month of June, which is just unreal. And for the first 3 months of the season, he did hit over 300, right? And July hit like a freight train. This month, July, he's got 2 home runs and he's batting 146. All right. His strikeout rate is nearly 30%. He's walking more, but like it's still a 146 average, a 222 OBP. And get this, a 220 slug. This dude's got a 222 OBP and it's better than his slugging. All right. His average last month was 315. His WRC plus is 16. He's been basically one of the worst hitters in baseball for the entire month of July. And on one hand, we've been giving advice of like, hey, you got to hold. And like, I give you those numbers. It's actually been even worse since the break. He's been just utterly abysmal. All those numbers actually come down by like 40 or 50 points just after the break. He's been especially bad of late. And so the question becomes, what do you do? And ranking him 81st puts him behind Esmerlin Valdez, who has hit a ton of home runs, but it puts him in this really, really big tier. Tier 10 goes from 80 all the way through 103. Right. And I think if you're in a 10 team league with 3 outfielders, you might be looking at a guy like Chase DeLauder, who has a lot of upside. He's got a lot of injury risk as well, but he hits in a good spot in the lineup. Maybe you do that. Or maybe you're looking at Joe Adell, who's shown some signs of turning it around lately. As good as Brandon Marsh was, I fear that if you continue to hold him for the rest of the season, you're just diluting the good results you got, right? At some point, you have to know when to jump, right? When do you take what you got and leave, right? You just, you know, you hit a couple times at the slots, right? Do you keep playing and give it all back, dilute what you have, or do you move on and try to take your winnings and leave and go find something else, another casino, a better hobby, whatever it is you got to do, right? Like, I think this is the time that happens, right? So he's in the same tier as Heriberto Hernandez. He's in the same tier as Tommy Edman, Ezekiel Duran, TJ Rumfield, who isn't an outfielder, but is heading back to Colorado. Cole Kerrig is, you know, in this conversation. These are guys that I think you can actually, Cole Kerrig is ranked above him. My mistake. I think it's time. I think it's time to move on. Again, if nobody in tier 10 isn't available in your league, then like, you know, don't worry about it. Maybe look at tier 11 as well. Like, you know, Dominic Canzone moves up 30 spots this week because he's showing some signs of life. You know, Ty France is in the tier below that. George Springer's looked good lately in a 10 team league. Even a 12-team league with 3 outfield, some of these guys might be available, and I think it's totally fine to take a shot, right? Nico Horner's looked good of late. There's plenty of guys who may be out there that it's like, hey, you know what? Why not kick the tires and see what happens? I think that is probably a better use of your time than holding out hope for Brandon Marsh to return to something that he'd never really been, you know, before. He showed a little bit of it at times in 2025, but you know, overall, the highest home run total he's ever had in his career is 16 in a season. He's tied that so far. He's never played 140 games before. he's never really been a full season sort of fantasy asset. And I'm not sure I think he is now. I think it's okay to move on. And look, maybe you're wrong. You're going to win some of these and lose some of these, right? I like to think I do it a little bit better than I did when I first started. But I think this is one of those times where it's okay to take the risk. It is okay to let go of a guy who ends up being good, right? Because you can't just hold the first one you got. You got to keep trying. You got to keep going out there and finding players. And if a guy's been this, especially when he's been this bad for a whole month, he's also fallen down the batting order quite a bit. I mean, that's a big part of this. So he was kind of locked in at fourth. He's now at sixth. The expected stats are as bad as the real ones, right? The strikeout rate, the rolling strikeout rate's now been hovering up at like 30% for the whole month. All the signs of like the kind of bad, not, or at least uninteresting version of Brandon Marsh are back. And I'm willing to let that hit the wire. I'm willing to let that go. Maybe I pick him up later, but I don't think my co-managers are chomping at the bit to pick him up right now. So go ahead, let him go. It's okay that you're giving up the guy who's got the best overall stats on the season of everybody in the wire. Who cares? You already got those. Those are your stats. You already have them. Everyone else is hoping that anything that comes after is nearly as good. And maybe it won't be. You got the good stats. Go ahead and run and go find something better.
Well, look at another outfielder who has fallen similarly to Marsh. That's New York Mets rookie Carson Bench, down 20 spots to 88th in the list. Bench and the Mets obviously not having the season that they wanted to. And I'm stalling while I pull up the roster resource page to see if he's still batting leadoff for them.
He is right behind the guy who is right now, which is AJ Ewing. And really, the way these guys are ranked right next to each other for a reason. Right now, AJ Ewing has the better opportunity. Carson Bench, I think, has the better bat, right? That's kind of the real way this works. I do think Carson Bench is a better hitter than AJ Ewing. I think long-term, I'd rather have Carson Bench than AJ Ewing. I think that right now, AJ Ewing has a better opportunity, despite the fact that this team is not good, right? Like, I'm not that excited to get pieces of this offense, especially with Juan Soto not being a part of it at the moment. But hey, I mean, I think AJ Ewing has turned it around a little bit of late, but these two guys, and they can't platoon with each other because they're both lefties. But I think this is an important time for these guys. I hate that. Like, normally I'd be excited that Bench is hitting fourth. I'd be like, oh, it's a great place to get RBI. But the lineup behind him is just horrid, right? It's Jared Young. It's Jorge Polanco, who I'm surprised even still on the roster. Tyrone Taylor's been hot lately, but I don't really think there's anything there. Then there's Brett Batty. And then, you know, Francisco Alvarez has been fine, but he bats all the way at ninth. I think, you know, the nice thing that Ewing has going for him is that the next best player on this team is Francisco Lindor. He's looked a lot better lately. He hits right behind Ewing. I think that's a chance for something to happen. These guys they're still good enough to roster, especially in five outfield leagues. But we are talking about, you know, once you get to these tiers, right? Like, even though they're in the top 100, outfield is deep. There's a lot of outfielders that are above them on this list. So I think if you're in a three outfield league, it really depends on what else is out there. But you don't need to move on from these guys, but keep your eye on the wire, especially if there's someone else in the tier that maybe is a little lower than them that's moving up. Right? Like, it's okay to take that shot.
One more outfielder that has fallen. We'll talk about this guy we talked about before the All-Star break, who we were excited about. Now he's falling back down the list, and maybe a trip to Coors will cure him this weekend, but it's Kansas City Royals outfielder Jack Caglione, down 24 spots to 116. And like I said, headed to Coors this weekend, so maybe we eat those words. He did homer today, I believe, on Thursday, but still down 24 spots.
Yeah, and the strikeout rate's gotten better, but you know, he's fallen pretty consistently of late, and there's exactly one reason. Coors Field does not help you with ground balls, all right? Coors Field, the thin air and everything, it doesn't matter if that ball is hit downward. Right. It does help you in the sense that pitches don't move quite as much. So you have a better chance to like identify your pitch and hit it in the air. But at his best, which was a little over a month ago now, Jack Caglione's ground ball rate was below 40%. His rolling ground ball rate was before 40%. And that's when he was just ripping the cover off the ball. Of course, now the rolling fly ball rate, really since the start of July, it's just spiked way back up, and it's in the high 50s, high 50% ground ball rate. There's no damage to be done there, right? There's no juice to get out of that orange when Jack Caglione's hitting over 50% ground balls. So even though the plate discipline's better, even though he's going to Coors, I'm still not that excited. The only thing that's really going to change is, I guess, you know, he's still hitting third or fourth right now, but that's because Bobby Witt's gone, Michael Garcia Jr.'s gone, and they just don't have a lot of other options to hit third. You know, Carter Jansen is struggling of late, but like the overall stats, especially the expected stats, are going to look like, oh, look how good Caglione's hitting the ball. But again, all those expected stats come in like a 2-week period where, like, really from like, really, I mean, you can even call it the whole month of June. The whole month of June, he just raked, right? His expected stats were off the charts. Since the break, they're bad, right? They're in the mid-ish 200s. So again, that's a bad play. I should have said this earlier. A good xWOBA is going to be somewhere above like 330, right? Average is going to be somewhere between like 310 to 330. That's like a very average expected WOBA. You get above that, you start getting to 360, 370. You're like, wow, that's pretty good. You get to the 400s and you're like, holy cow, this guy's crushing. When you get down to like 300, you're like, this isn't so good. You get down to the 280s. You're like, this is really not good. You get down to the 260s, 270s, where Caglione is right now, you're like, this is just bad. This is bad. We expect you, like, the batted ball data says you should be terrible. There's not really a way around that. You can't get, you can outperform an xWOBA, like, you know, Ozzie Albies is right now, but that, you know, there's only so long that you can do this by hook or by crook, right? So Caglione's numbers are still really, really boosted by the month of June, and he's been bad every other month. And I really want to stress that. In April, 2 home runs, 4 RBI, he hit 250. In May, 3 home runs, 7 RBI, he hit 222. In June, 9 home runs, 19 RBI, he hit 309. And in July, 2 home runs, 8 RBI, he hit 220. Right? So, like, you can chase that June all you want. I'm not saying he can't do it again. I'm just saying, how long do you want to wait? If it's coming, how long do you want to wait for it? Right? How long do you want to wait and not just chase someone else for power? Right? Again, if this is like a long-term keeper dynasty situation, you can just sit on it, go ahead. Right? But like, Heriberto Hernandez is available. Right? You know, Bryce Eldridge has probably been cut a lot of places. Willy Adames has been cut in a lot of places. George Springer's hitting right now. Ty France is hitting right now. Go do that. Right? There's power there. Just go get that. It'll give you what you're looking for. And again, Jack Caglione has not ever really shown that he can sustain a low ground ball rate for very long. Until he does, again, this is the same problem Jordan Walker had. On the one hand, that's a good thing, right? You're like, oh, wow. Jordan Walker's like one of the best hitters in the league. He's actually also struggled a lot of late. But like, if he fixes it, he could be great. Remember that it took Walker like 3 years to do that. It took him 3 full seasons to figure out how to consistently get the ball in the air, right? Caglione is in full season number 1, right? Like, he's played officially 162 games. It could be a slow burn, especially with these high ground ball rate guys. It's tough. Batted ball, it's one thing when they're just like striking out all the time. A lot of times that's just teaching them like, hey, don't swing at these. This is different. Look, he's not terrible at picking the right times to swing. It's that when he hits it, it goes down, right? And you can't hit the ball. The best possible ball that can be hit off the ground is a ground rule double, right? But even that is usually categorized as a fly ball or a line drive. Generally speaking, unless you get like one of those grounders that like hits off the bag at third and then trickles around into some weird place, you're hitting a single, maybe a double if it goes just right. So until he's getting the ball in the air, none of that power is going to matter.
Well, Scott, we've covered all the names on the show sheet. Is there anybody else that you wanted to talk about? Whether it's a riser, faller, taxi squad, injury, anybody on the list?
Yeah, I mean, again, I'll say it. Make sure that you're getting Rockies. The Rockies are at home. So that'll be a good place to grab some stuff. Luis Lara, Milwaukee Brewers prospect. He's hitting the ball pretty well. He's found some more playing time over the last week. Playing time was my major concern. He's found a bit more of it of late. I think he's someone that you should be scooping up, who may still be available in shallow leagues. You know, Cooper Pratt has been really hot, but I still think he's just a points league guy. I'm just trying to cover some of the quick hits here. Our boy Willie Castro made it back into the rankings because he's been hitting well and he's going back to Coors. So, you know, he's still out there. And yet, despite the grand slam today, I'm still very concerned about Cody Clemens. He's ranked. He technically moved up the ranks to like 137, but I'm still really concerned. The decision making is still really, really bad of late. I've been posting these charts in the articles for the last few weeks. It's really bad. That's going to be really hard for him to continue. If you can trade Cody Clemens for anything in tier 11 or higher, you should do it right now. Off the back of one of these games, because right now he's hitting the occasional home run, but he's not hitting for any average. He's, you know, this offense is now without Byron Buxton. So like, who's supposed to be the good hitter for the Twins right now? Josh Bell completely fell off. Who's the best hitter in their lineup right now? Royce Lewis, maybe. You could argue it's Cody Clemens. Ryan Jeffers, who doesn't play every day. It's ugly up there. I'd be trying not to rely on the Twins as much as possible right now.
Beautiful. Tell the people where to find you and your work, Scott.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at If The Chew Fits. You can find me on Blue Skies, scottchew.pitcherlist.com. And you can also find me on Reddit at Chusif Esquire. And obviously the Reddit AMA every Friday. Find me at all those places, of course. And then the article that is coming out on Fridays lately, but we'll get back to Thursday soon once work stops making me work so much.
Beautiful. You can find me at Fade That Man on all the socials, in the Pitcher List Discord, obviously on Pitcher List Podcast Network, hosting Hacks and Jacks, and also on QB List Network, talking up fantasy football with Jay Felicio. Make sure to tune in next week and make sure to check out Scott's top 150 hitters list on pitcherlist.com tomorrow, Friday, today, probably when you're listening. Thanks for tuning in and have a great weekend. We'll see you all next time. Later.